The doses may be child-sized, but the distribution is anything but small. COVID-19 vaccines for younger children rolling out across Ontario. Appointments set to open within hours. Good evening. Many families in this province will be setting an extra alarm tomorrow morning. Bookings begin at 8 a.m.
Roughly a million kids now qualify for a shot of protection. They must be 5 years old by the end of this year to be eligible. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, that vaccine booking portal will open for those children between the ages of 5 and 11, just as parents are scrambling to get those students to school. It'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. The province says more than a million children are eligible, and the first doses go into those little arms on Thursday. For parents across the country, this shipment of the Pfizer pediatric vaccine brings with it a wave of relief. Millions of doses arrived in Hamilton over the weekend, now destined for vaccine clinics across the province.
The shipment for today is about a little over 400,000, and then there's a shipment of a little over 600,000.
Beginning tomorrow at 8 a.m., the provincial vaccine booking portal will be open for children between the ages of 5 and 11. The province says the vaccine will be available at doctors' offices, pharmacies, immunization clinics, and even schools, although only during evenings and weekends. Parents are being urged to jump at the opportunity.
Generally, most children do well if they do end up contracting COVID-19. So I think even one dose before the holidays is already enough to really get you a lot of the way there with that confidence.
But even before the shot becomes available, there are concerns from some about the potential impacts on the unvaccinated, especially as the government acknowledges not every parent wants to sign their child up.
We know that at least 50% of all of the parents of children in this age group are ready to have their child vaccinated right away. About 30% want to have more information.
And for that 30%, there are concerns about their children.
Children age 12 and up who have been excluded from all sorts of activities. We have high-level hockey players who can't play anymore. We have, a girl who has danced at a studio her entire life. She's not welcome there anymore. And then we have organizations like the YMCA that is not letting anyone in over the age of 12 without double vaccination.
The government says young children will receive a receipt and a QR code, but says there won't be a proof of vaccination requirement for the youngest Ontarians for now. The province says the interval between doses for the pediatric Pfizer vaccine will be 8 weeks. And they say if your child received their first dose now and then waited 8 weeks but turned 12 in the meantime, they could be eligible for an adult dose for their second shot. Reporting live at Queen's Park, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Across the province, nearly 89% of eligible people have received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And just under 86% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 11.2 million people in Ontario.
The province's booking portal will be a popular destination, and this is not the news the government wants to be dealing with right now.
An investigation underway into a potential security breach linked to the system. The scale still not clear. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, the premier says he was first briefed about this breach over the weekend, but we still don't know what personal information may have been accessed, from names, medical records, or potentially even social insurance numbers. But despite that, the province says the vaccine portal is still safe.
A day before families can book vaccine appointments for their children using the province's COVID portal, the Ford government revealed the system has potentially been hacked.
I'll be very frank, it's way above probably all our heads right here. They're getting more technical, more sophisticated every single day.
OPP have opened an investigation following reports of people getting spam text messages, like this one, asking them to reply in order to accept an e-transfer and receive payment.
This one was interesting because it was my daughter who was 12 years old. It was in her name.
The province says those affected either scheduled appointments or access their vaccine certificate through the province's immunization system.
It was her name, her full name with middle name, and her middle name was fully capitalized. And the only time I've ever seen that was on her vaccine passport.
The province still doesn't know if there's a connection between the booking tool and text messages, or what personal information may have been hacked, but insists the website is safe for Ontarians to keep using.
We investigate thoroughly. We are doing that now. We have confidence in the booking system that there are no concerns.
A cyber attack in Newfoundland and Labrador crippled the province's healthcare system earlier this month, where personal health information was accessed. Experts noting hospitals are prime targets during the pandemic.
Attackers focus on vulnerabilities. That's where they can exercise maximum leverage.
Adding that while Ontario launched its online vaccine portal in March of this year, it's too early to judge if the portal's security features were insufficient.
As we develop these technology features quickly, they can oftentimes be vulnerable to the kinds of cybersecurity attacks that we've seen.
As Ontarians now wait to see if their information has been compromised.
Now, while this investigation is in the hands of the OPP, the Solicitor General said that to her knowledge, no one has had any money stolen from them at this point in time. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Straight ahead, putting Toronto's best foot forward, the pitch to host World Cup matches in 2026, the changes that would need to be made for the city to meet FIFA requirements.
They are the service cutbacks, creating longer commutes for some who rely on the TTC.
The agency and its riders adjusting to staffing shortages created by a vaccination mandate. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more. Scott.
Michelle, the TTC says that scheduling changes were made at routes and times that are less traveled. But of course, the system is integrated. People take buses, streetcars and subways to get from place to place. So depending on where you're going, it may take you a little extra time.
The morning commute turning into a morning scramble for some.
I'm late for work. Yeah. The 78 bus comes once in half an hour, and he's been late 15 minutes.
A number of TTC service changes came into effect today across the transit system to deal with staff shortages after the commission's mandatory vaccination policy took effect over the weekend.
Everyone's going to be late, and that's very inconvenient.
The TTC says 92% of their employees have shared their vaccination status, with the majority being fully vaccinated. As of today, the commission says streetcar service is running at 100% compared to last week, bus and subway service running at 94% compared to the same time.
The TTC has had months to plan for a staff shortage, but they haven't hired enough operators, and it's partly because they're facing a budget shortfall. So we're asking the mayor to secure emergency transit operating funding and delay the vaccine mandate deadline. We support vaccination. We think it's really important to keep transit users and workers safe, but they could bring in interim measures like rapid testing while they engage in a hiring blitz, because service cuts aren't acceptable.
The TTC says the changes are being made to routes that are less traveled or being enacted in off-peak hours.
There will be some service adjustments and reductions on the less busy routes at the less busy times of day. But all of those busy routes, you know, you think of a Jane or a Keele Street, a Markham Road, those sorts of routes in rush hour will be fully protected. They'll have exactly the same service they had, you know, a week or two ago.
Still, for those who ride each day, it's an unwanted delay.
They're supposed to pass. Yep, minute ago, but they're going to be 10 minutes delay. I don't know why.
Marzi Ganji waited longer than normal for her bus today. Knowing now about the changes, she will plan her day differently.
I have to be at work in certain time. Then because this bus is every half an hour, then I'm going to be 15 minutes late or 15 minutes early.
The TTC says their ridership levels are currently about half of what they were before the pandemic.
And the TTC says service will improve in the coming weeks as more and more employees become fully vaccinated. They say they hope to have back to full service by the end of the year. The TTC says they're also hiring 450 additional bus drivers by the end of the year, hope to have them trained and on the road as soon as possible. Reporting live near Markham and Shepherd, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Scott. A coyote sits in the yard of a North York school suspected of being involved in two recent biting incidents.
The animal's presence and aggressive behavior leading to a fateful response from wildlife officials this morning. CTV's Austin Delaney's live near Bayview and Shepherd with more. Austin.
Well, Toronto police originally wanted to use a tranquilizer dart so they could relocate the coyote, but they ended up euthanizing it. They felt that the tranquilizer might not work fast enough and the coyote could escape.
The coyote lay on the grass by the school fence, calmly watching as animal services and the ETF prepared. The young kids inside Hollywood Public School portables had been moved to the main building so they would not have to see what happened next. This is video taken yesterday of the coyote wandering in Bayview Village Park, where police say two people were bitten.
There's a little bridge. So on the other side of the bridge, there was a guy coming, and I see him getting scared because something was walking behind him. Looks like an off-leash dog, but no, it was the coyote, a big coyote.
The coyote had eluded police and animal services yesterday as they set out to trap it.
While I was standing right here talking to animal services, they spotted the coyote across the field and just went walking slowly up to it.
By this morning, though, it had made its way across busy Bayview Avenue to the schoolyard, where it appeared fearless of human activity. The initial plan was to shoot the animal with a tranquilizer dart.
Well, the thing with the tranquilizer, you know, it does take time to set in. And with that being a concern, the coyote could be on the loose again and is able to hop over a fence.
The ETF sent an officer armed with a rifle to take position on the roof of a portable with his sights on the coyote, while animal services with nets spread out around the school property. The decision was made by Toronto police to fatally shoot the dog.
I know that the single most frequent reason for a police officer to use his firearm in a city every single year is in respect of animals, and that's regrettable, deeply regrettable, but they have to put safety first.
Back at the park where it had bitten humans.
If they were a danger to humans or children, yes, it's good to kill. But otherwise, let them be. Let them just have a life of their own.
I feel sorry for those, you know, but they had to protect the people, right?
The number of reported coyote sightings in Toronto is up considerably. In 2020, there were 1,771. In 2021, 2,796 to date. Toronto Animal Services says it could be COVID-related.
We were away from the city and away from our workplaces for a long time. That wildlife moved into those areas, and now, you know, things are adjusting because we're moving back and moving around again. And so we're seeing them more in spaces that we haven't seen them in before.
Or people are at home and the opportunity to spot them.
And addressing the biting issue, the Toronto Wildlife Centre says that the coyote was displaying typical behavior of a wild animal being fed by humans. It's asking people not to do it. It does change a wild animal's behavior. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
Thank you, Austin. Some parts of southern Ontario are seeing a blast of winter weather tonight. Snow squalls from Georgian Bay are having an effect across the region this evening. Depending on where you live, there could be watches and warnings in effect. Michelle Jobin is here with what we need to know tonight. Michelle.
Well, Michelle, you're right. There are watches and warnings in effect. And in fact, we've just had a winter weather travel advisory expand to include southern York region, southern Durham region, and parts to the east. But here's a look at satellite and radar imagery. And these bands coming off of Lake Huron and Georgian Bay are quite intense, and we are seeing the effects here in the GTA and will continue to. In fact, we could get even some accumulating snow in the city of Toronto, traced to 2 centimeters, elsewhere further to the north, 2 to 5 centimeters. And then if you're in these areas in the orange, you know, Bruce County, in parts of Huron and Perth County, extending into northern Durham and York region and the Barrie area, these are areas that could see 10 to 20 centimeters of accumulation. So what you need to know is travel is difficult on the roads. Whiteout conditions can happen in seconds. And, of course, roads will be very slick. Of course, we also have some pretty gusty winds driving these and cooler temperatures as well. I could stay tuned for that because it's going to be quite cold overnight. I'll break down your full forecast coming up. Nathan?
All right. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks.
They're also keeping a close eye on the weather in parts of rain-ravaged British Columbia, the newest threat to the province, still cleaning up from disastrous flooding and mudslides.
We want to warn you, this next story contains disturbing content. In Wisconsin, a 39-year-old suspect will be charged with murder following the deaths of 5 people at a Christmas parade.
Police say a man fleeing a domestic disturbance drove his SUV into dozens of people yesterday, also injuring 48 of them. CTV's Richard Madden reports.
Amateur footage shows the red SUV speeding so close to a child as the driver plowed straight into a parade route, hitting onlookers and performers.
I saw people right away run to the people that were hit and start doing CPR. And I saw people on the ground. There's blood. It was really bad.
What began as a joyous celebration of the holidays ended in chaos and tragedy. Parade-goers ditching strollers and jackets in the rush for safety. In the aftermath, at least five were killed, more than three dozen injured, including children.
Last night, our wonderful Waukesha Parade became the scene of a horrific tragedy. Last night, that parade became a nightmare.
Police say their driver, 39-year-old Daryl Brooks, was fleeing a domestic dispute and smashed past street barricades trying to escape. Brooks has since been charged with at least five counts of intentional homicide.
And we are confident he acted alone. There's no evidence that this is a terrorist incident.
We're all grateful for the extraordinary work of the first responders, from law enforcement to the emergency room doctors, who are working round the clock to deal with the terrible consequences of what happened last night.
And the White House says it's monitoring the tragedy closely. Meantime, in Waukesha, school classes are canceled, grief counselors are available as the tight-knit community begins to heal. Richard Madden, CTV News, Washington.
And our online team is keeping track of every development with this story. You can find full coverage at ctvnews.ca.
Back in this province, we're hearing from the daughter of a beloved couple killed in a horrific crash near High Park last month.
Family sharing their grief as we learn details about the person accused in the collision. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
More than a month after a five-car crash that claimed the lives of a Toronto couple, Arthur Cotullo was charged with two counts of criminal negligence causing death.
For me, there's no justice. Like, my parents are gone. I don't get the daily calls from my father anymore.
Ashley Avila's parents, 71-year-old Valdemar and 69-year-old Fatima, were sitting in traffic on Parkside Drive at 4:40 p.m. Tuesday, October the 12th, when they were rear-ended. Valdemar would die at the scene. Fatima would die in hospital.
They were just stopped at a light. You know, like, my parents could, there's nothing they could have done.
And as CTV News first reported Friday, court documents show that Cotullo was charged with impaired operation over 80 and impaired operation in Peel Region on September 21st, just 3 weeks before the accident that claimed the Avila's lives. Those charges come with an automatic 90-day driving suspension.
My dad is very religious, and he always taught me, like, you know, you have to forgive. But today, I looked up and I said to him, how can I? How can I? This is this person should not have been on the road.
While his bail hearing has been put over twice, court also heard Cotullo does not have immigration status in Canada currently, and that there's also an immigration hold from CBSA, Canada Border Services Agency. While the CBSA can't comment on the specifics of this case due to privacy issues, a spokesperson told CTV News the agency has a legal obligation to remove all foreign nationals and permanent residents that have been convicted of a crime and are inadmissible to Canada under Section 36 of the Immigration and Refugee Protection Act.
It's devastating all around. I wish I could just reverse this whole thing. This guy didn't need to be in jail. My parents could be at this table right now. I wish I could reverse everything, but you can't.
The CBSA says criminal proceedings take precedence over immigration matters. However, it adds once criminal proceedings are completed, the person may be removed. Cotullo will be back in court on Friday. Janice Golding, CTV News.
A warning about some of the details in this next story. We're learning more about the actions of the father of the police officer convicted in an assault on Defonte Miller back in 2016.
As CTV's John Woodward reports, the father was a senior officer in the Toronto Police Professional Standards Unit.
Defonte Miller was beaten with a lead pipe in 2016. Off-duty Toronto Police Constable Michael Terrio was convicted of assault in the attack, which left Miller without the use of one eye. Police officers arrived at the scene, among them Terrio's father, Detective John Terrio, who worked in the TPS's Professional Standards Unit. A new report before the Toronto Police Services Board looked into significant public scrutiny on the elder Terrio's role and a suggestion that John Terrio may have improperly influenced the investigation, one that did not result in a call to the SIU, which investigates death or serious injury at the hands of police. The Waterloo Regional Police Report concludes Detective Terrio did go to the scene, but just to support his sons, saying, Waterloo Regional Police Service was unable to find any information or indication that he offered any undue influence in this matter or became involved in this matter or was involved in any decision regarding the notification of the SIU. The Waterloo report may not be the final word on the matter. The detective is among the defendants in a lawsuit by Miller alleging he and other police officers conspired together to cover up his son's criminal conduct. The lawsuit claims Detective John Terrio failed to alert his employer, the TPS board, that his son, PC Terrio, had been involved in an incident with a member of the public that resulted in serious bodily injury, such that the SIU could be notified and an investigation undertaken. Detective Terrio has retired and didn't return messages. There is a notice of intent to defend at the court. The TPS apologized for how it handled the case, a situation that inflamed tensions with Toronto's Black community.
Trust has been broken between the police, Defonte Miller, and the broader community. For that, on behalf of the Toronto Police Service, I want to apologize.
Its new policy is to call the SIU even if the officer involved is off duty. John Woodward, CTV News.
After nearly 3 months, optometrists are resuming eye exams for children and seniors tomorrow. The Ontario Association of Optometrists says it's a sign of good faith after agreeing to formal negotiations. On September 1st, they stopped OHIP-covered services for those 19 and under, 65 and older, and people with special conditions. The optometrists say the province is underfunding their services, leaving them paying about 45% of the cost out of pocket. The government has said it's prepared to increase reimbursements by nearly 8.5%.
MPs returned to the House of Commons today after nearly 5 months, and the first order of business was to choose a speaker. Liberal Anthony Rota was re-elected, and in a long-standing tradition, the speaker feigned reluctance as he was dragged to his chair by the prime minister and opposition leader. It will get serious tomorrow, though, when the government's agenda is detailed in the throne speech.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 627 new cases in its most recent update. 341 of those cases are in those who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 19,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours. And the province's positivity rate is sitting at 3.4%.
494 more cases are considered resolved, raising that total to nearly 597,000 over the course of the pandemic. One additional death is linked to the virus, meaning 9,968 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 92 new cases in the city of Toronto and 53 in Peel Region. There are 38 new cases in York Region, with 25 in Niagara. Durham and Halton Regions both have 24 new cases, with 20 in Hamilton.
Austria entered its fourth nationwide lockdown of the pandemic today. The country has one of the lowest vaccination rates in Western Europe at about 66%. The average daily COVID-19 deaths tripled in recent weeks, and some hospitals warned intensive care units were hitting capacity. It's expected the lockdown will be extended for a total of 20 days.
The Women's Tennis Association says a new photo does nothing to alleviate concerns over the safety of Chinese tennis player Peng Shuai. The International Olympic Committee posted a photo yesterday of a video call it had with Peng, but the WTA suggests she may have been coerced or censored. Chinese state media also released video of Peng at a youth tennis tournament in Beijing. She went missing nearly 3 weeks ago after accusing China's former vice premier of sexually assaulting her.
Well, it sure is making for some exciting chatter among soccer fans. Could Toronto play host to some World Cup action in 2026?
A delegation from FIFA visiting the city today. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, the representatives from FIFA were looking at the city's infrastructure. They were looking at the training facilities, but most of all, they were looking at the stadium. At the stadium where Toronto hopes to host World Cup matches in 2026, today was a chance to show FIFA what the city can do.
We are all in to bring the FIFA World Cup to Toronto in 2026.
With a tour of BMO Field and a presentation, the city was making its final pitch.
Canada, Mexico, and USA have been selected.
Back in June of 2018, FIFA announced that a united bid by Canada, the United States, and Mexico would host the 2026 World Cup. Now, within the three countries, there are 22 cities bidding to host matches. FIFA will later choose 16 venues.
We look at accommodation, we look at transport, we look at logistics. Most importantly of all, it's about the people.
After Montreal dropped out last summer, there are now just two Canadian cities bidding, Toronto and Edmonton. FIFA Vice President Victor Montagliani says he's noticed Toronto growing as a soccer city.
In terms of being at the sharp end of the game, it's obviously gone to another level over the last, I'd say, 10 years. at least.
With the delegation touring BMO Field this afternoon, it was noted that there is some work ahead of the stadium to reach FIFA standards.
Right now, the capacity for soccer at BMO Field is 30,000 spectators. For a FIFA World Cup match, the minimum is 45,000.
As part of the bid, BMO Field would expand capacity, but don't expect big construction over the coming years.
Certainly, the extra seating to get to that minimum requirement would be temporary seating.
The city has expanded capacity for both the 2017 Centennial Classic hockey game and the MLS final that same year. While Canada has not qualified for a World Cup since 1986, the team currently sits in a playoff spot to qualify for the 2022 tournament. And in 2026, the World Cup will expand from 32 teams to 48 teams, making this bid hopeful to hosting a home match.
And of all the cities that FIFA was visiting, Toronto was the last stop on their tour, but we will have to wait. It'll be likely until April 2022 before we'll find out if Toronto will host. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. I'll send it back inside.
All right, thank you, Sean. It's a sure sign of the holiday season, the return of our Toy Mountain campaign for 2021.
And 2021 marks the 26th anniversary of the effort benefiting the Salvation Army. Our Andrea Case is host for this year. Andrea, tell us where you are tonight.
Good evening, Michelle and Nathan. I am in Markham at the Salvation Army's toy headquarters. And you might not believe this because you're inside the studio, but outside it is actually snowing. So really, it is perfect for Toy Mountain. So here we are. This location is in Markham. I'm just going to walk down the hall here and introduce you to the man
of the hour,
Glenn Van Gulik, who's the Divisional Secretary for Public Relations for the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
Glenn, here we are. It's been quite a year for so many people.
It has been.
Tough times for so many people.
Yeah.
But we really need to help give kids a Christmas. How are we going to do that?
We're
going to
do that with toys and support. Families at Christmas time, they need our help. There are so many families that are struggling, especially now. It's been a tough 18, 20 months. Many have struggled with losing a job or struggling to with reduced hours, those kinds of things. And so families need their neighbors' support. And it's neighbors helping neighbors, right? Supporting with toys at Toy Mountain, CTV's Toy Mountain, launching tonight. Wonderful to see you. And welcome to the Salvation Army's Toy Distribution Center.
Now, a little later on in the program, we're going to actually take you inside the distribution center. But, you know, we just want to give you some time before that. What are you looking for this year? Kids, teens, everybody needs something. What are you specifically looking for? What are you asking our viewers to give if they can?
Well, yes, please, give if you can. You can donate a new unwrapped toy and drop it off at any of the Toy Mountain locations throughout the GTA. Visit toymountain.ca and click on Toronto, and you'll find all of those locations where you can donate that toy and drop it off. But we're looking for toys from kids from a newborn right up until 15, 16 years old. And so the toughest challenging age, really, is between that 7 to 12 year old range. So toys for kids in that range would be so helpful.
Okay, and so we're going to ask folks to donate. They can donate several ways.
They can.
One, they can text. Tell us about texting.
Yeah, so they can text TOYS to 30333 on their mobile device. They can also donate online at toymountain.ca. Toymountain.ca, they can hit Toronto and make a donation there.
Okay, let's just go for a little walk.
Sure.
We've got all these volunteers
here.
Everybody say hello. And behind this door, after the commercial break, we will tell you what's behind the door. Stay with us, folks, live from Markham and the Toy Mountain Toy Shop.
Thanks, Andrea. I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, many people will be shopping online for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. If you are, don't get caught paying duty on items that you weren't planning to. There are some ways to know if there are extra costs involved. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
We saw those flurries outside the window there where Andrea was in Markham, and we're dealing with a fair bit of that. And depending on where you are this evening, you could be seeing 10 to 20 centimeters of snow accumulating with these squalls that have been ongoing during the day, and they're really ramping up for some of us through the overnight. Here in Toronto, we could see up to 2 centimeters, further afield 2 to 5, and as I mentioned, 10 to 20 in areas that are in the warnings. We'll take a look at those coming up again, and our overnight lows are definitely on the cold side, -5, feeling like -7 in the city of Toronto. So that colder air with the relatively warmer upper Great Lakes, that's really igniting these squalls. -12 in Peterborough, -15 in Bancroft, -7 in Kingston. I'll break down your full forecast coming up very soon. Stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
The- The holiday shopping season kicks into high gear with Black Friday later this week and Cyber Monday a week from today.
And if you're shopping online, you have to be careful you don't get a surprise and have to pay more than you thought. Pat Foran explains on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Nathan and Michelle. When you shop online, some items you buy could be coming from another country. And along with taxes and shipping, you could also have to pay duties and brokerage fees. You should ask before you click so you don't end up with unexpected charges. Online shopping has surged during the pandemic, and the Canada Border Services Agency says it's seen a 117% increase over the past 3 years in the shipments it deals with. It's reminding Canadians when items cross the Canadian border, there may be duties added to the final price tag.
There's a definite sticker shock with a lot of people when it comes to stuff that's coming across the border.
A duty is a tariff paid on an item imported to Canada. The agency says don't assume purchases from web addresses ending in .ca means the goods are within Canada. It's also reminding Canadians that receiving or sending cannabis in or out of the country by mail or courier is illegal and you could be arrested and prosecuted.
It is illegal to move it across an international border, so you can't send it anywhere and you can't import it.
When it comes to lower value items, $20 and under are duty and tax free. Above $20, duties and taxes may apply. And gifts worth $60 or less must be sent by a friend or relative. Duties will vary depending on the item and where it's from, but there are ways to determine if you'll have to pay extra.
If it wasn't made here or in the US or Mexico, duty applies to it, so be prepared that you may end up having to pay that plus the taxes on top of it.
If you're not sure if you have to pay duties, the agency's website has a duty and taxes calculator. You enter where you live, the item you're buying, and where it's being shipped from, and you'll get an estimate of the cost. The agency also wants people to know threatening scam phone calls are being made from criminals claiming to be with Border Services that are not legitimate.
We will never call someone to let them know that there's an arrest warrant against them. Those are absolutely scam calls, unfortunately, and they are prevalent right now.
And supply chain issues are also causing backlogs, and some goods remain stuck on container ships. The border agency is advising shoppers to do their holiday gift buying early to avoid delays. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Under the forecast, things cooling down, and I know the kids love this. We could get a bit of snow.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to note, whenever we get the first, you know, that's not overly significant, at least for Toronto proper, but whenever we first get a decent dose, you do have to adjust your driving because we're not used to it. I feel like we're not used to it this cold, and then, yeah, the white stuff's coming.
This is such an important point and really relevant to what we're talking about tonight with these squalls, because not only are we talking about whiteout conditions in areas seeing the squalls, but even here in the city of Toronto, where we could get traced to 2 centimeters, roads will be slick, and we definitely need to adjust our driving. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So yes, cold and getting colder as we get through the overnight period. We're definitely a bit below seasonal. We're at -1 right now in the city of Toronto and feeling like -7 with the wind chill. So winds have been quite gusty today, and they're part of what has really ignited this, this lake effect machine that's been giving us these squalls off the upper Great Lakes. And these squalls are actually reaching all the way down into the GTA. So we're seeing that flurry activity on our roads and in our neighborhoods as well. And you might have a little bit to brush off the car in the morning, even if you live downtown. They're going to shift a little bit tomorrow, and we'll take a look at that. But there are a lot of areas of concern, and they're covered in these watches and warnings and the winter weather travel advisory that you see here that's extending from southern York region all the way over towards Northumberland County. So Cobourg, Belleville, this includes southern Durham region. These are areas that could see some accumulation and some poor visibility at times. But if you're in this broader warning that's in effect, really adjacent to Lake Huron, Georgian Bay, these are areas, also Lake Simcoe, these are areas that are definitely going to see somewhere in the range of 10 to 20. And it's hard to really determine exactly how much with these squalls because they are intermittent. And we also have this for southern Huron and southern Perth County. So we're going to lose this activity by the time we get into the day tomorrow. We're going to see a bit of a shift in the winds. They're also going to die down. high pressure sliding into place on the surface. We have an upper level trough that's keeping us quite cold. And another system is going to help to warm us up a little bit more for midweek. But putting our forecast radar in motion, you see this very persistent squall really coming across from Lake Huron, Georgian Bay, all the way down in through to York region, Durham region, the GTA. They shift a little bit tomorrow, Lake Huron, down through the London, Hamilton area, including Stratford as well. And then we get some clearing. The next thing we're looking for is showers starting up as we get into, I would say, Wednesday night into Thursday, and they'll be with us during the day. So overnight tonight, like this, -5, feeling like -7 with those accumulating flurries. Tomorrow, high of just 2 degrees during the day. Normal is 6 degrees. 6 degrees for Wednesday. So we warm up a little bit, showers and 5 for Thursday, then cooling down for the rest of the week. Back to you, Nathan.
All right. Thank you so much, Michelle. So you know Toy Mountain Drive is starting today, the big launch. And I know the big push is to donate online, but you can still go to the mall, many of them.
I know. There's so many different ways you can donate now. And I hope for anybody at home, maybe you've started your holiday shopping already. Maybe you still have to shop, but you'll think about kids in our very own community in need. This is really a big deal for us here at CTV News because over the years, we've seen, Andrea, we've seen it make such a big difference on Christmas morning in kids' lives.
Absolutely. Whether it's Christmas or other holidays you celebrate, the Salvation Army has a toy for your child. But let's go inside to the toy shop and see what's going on. Hello there.
Hello, everybody.
Okay, so we have some friends here joining us today. This is Curtis Vickers from the Toronto area Ford dealers. And Curtis, once again, Ford is on board for Toy Mountain. Why did Ford come back again this year?
This is our 12th year, Andrea, and we just think it's such an important cause. I mean, very few better than making a kid smile with a toy. So, like I said, this is our 12th year, and we're happy to be able to participate and support again.
Now, I know the dealers, there's 23 in the Toronto area.
23 Toronto area Ford dealers from Oakville to Oshawa.
And you also have donation bins in the Ford dealership.
Correct. And you know, we're thrilled to be able to welcome people back to our showrooms. We've got the bins set up. They can donate a toy. And like I said, it's eventually going to make its way here. So.
Okay. Now, not everybody wants to donate a toy. They also want to donate cash. And you, sir, have a check.
I mean, this could be a toy. We don't.
It could be
a toy. It's a flat cardboard toy for the amount of $10,000.
There
you go. Yes, thank you.
Round of applause, everybody. Now, when somebody makes a donation like this, they can use the money to buy the toys that aren't donated. In particular, what's really important for teens, boys or girls, whether it's beauty aids or curling irons, blow dryers, things that a kid would want, they perhaps they don't want toys at that age. So here we have a lot of volunteers. They're sorting. These volunteers come back year after year after year. They spend hundreds of hours sorting the toys. And so, once again, you can donate online. You can donate at the locations of the malls, as Michelle and Nathan just said. And coming up after this break, we're going to tell you how many toys have been raised so far because people have been donating already. So stay with us, CTV News.
Turning now to the situation in British Columbia, and all eyes are on the forecast.
The next major weather system's rolling in after last week's deadly storm. CTV's Bill Mildior has the latest.
A second atmospheric river in a week delivered a deluge to the BC coast, this time in the north, with Haida Gwaii and Prince Rupert taking direct hits. The system dropping over 100 millimeters of rain in places, accompanied by 90 kilometer per hour gusts of wind, triggering flooding and landslide concerns. Cautious optimism in Abbotsford, where flood waters on the Sumas Prairie continue to recede thanks to ongoing repairs to breaches in key dikes. Pumps continue to work around the clock, and floodgates are now open, helping drain water from homes and farmland.
There are about 150 dump trucks working around the clock to repair dikes around the Sumas Prairie. Mayor Braun of Abbotsford estimates that more than 50% of the main breach has been repaired.
Those in the hardest hit areas looking ahead to Wednesday and Thursday when another round of wet weather rolls in, bringing heavy rain and the risk of more flooding and landslides. In preparation, the military continues its work, filling sandbags to protect key infrastructure and vulnerable low-lying properties most at risk from the next storm rolling in off the Pacific.
Trying to make the best of this break in the weather to do the best we can to shore up the defenses and make sure that homes, people and their livelihoods are protected.
In the meantime, the province remains divided, with some key highways between the Lower Mainland and the interior still impassable, and others open, but only for essential travel. Military choppers delivering much-needed food and supplies to communities cut off by landslides and washouts.
It's more important than ever that we stick together. Now is the time for patience and compassion as we all come to terms with the scale of this disaster.
Motorists in the Southwest limited to 30 liters of gas per trip to the pumps as the province rations fuel in the face of a possible shortage. Shelves in many grocery stores bare as people stock up, concerned any more severe weather could break already stressed supply chains. Ben Milger, CTV News, Vancouver.
Vaccine Hunters is back now that Canadian kids are getting COVID-19 shots.
We recognize it's still an all-hands-on-deck situation, and we're eager to get to the finish line as soon as possible, and we're all here to help.
The group will be posting regular updates on Twitter and Facebook about available appointments for pediatric vaccines and booster shots. Parents in Ontario can start booking tomorrow.
One of this country's most celebrated authors will be honored this week in Toronto. Canada Post has created a special stamp featuring Margaret Atwood. It will be unveiled Thursday at the Reference Library downtown, and the award-winning authors expected to attend. Atwood has written more than 50 books of poetry, fiction, essays, and graphic novels.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
...50% of all of the parents of children in this age group are ready to have their child vaccinated right away.
Updating our top story, starting tomorrow, kids between 5 and 11 years old will be able to book appointments to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Shots will be administered at doctor's offices, clinics, and schools, possibly as soon as November 25th.
We have confidence in the booking system that there are no concerns.
The province says its vaccine portal remains safe to use as the OPP investigates a potential hack. It comes after people received spam text messages asking them to reply in order to accept a payment. Those affected either scheduled appointments or accessed their vaccine certificate through the provincial portal.
The TTC has had months to plan for a staff shortage, but they haven't hired enough operators.
Service cuts came into effect across the TTC network today as the Transit Commission deals with a shortage of staff. It's the result of the TTC's mandatory vaccine policy, which saw a number of workers placed on unpaid leave over the weekend.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 32 basis points to 78.74 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 81 cents a barrel to close at 76.75. And the TSX Composite Index lost 134 points to close at 21,420.
The CRTC opened hearings today into Rogers' proposed $26 billion takeover of Shaw Communications. Rogers told the commission the merger would enhance competition, but there were no guarantees Shaw customers won't see their bills go up. The Calgary-based telecom insisted it needs a partnership to make necessary investments. The hearings are focused on the broadcast implications of the deal. The federal government has final approval. Many parents are looking ahead to the start of vaccination bookings for their children.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Chanel Call. Reshmi, you'll be speaking with a panel of medical experts.
Yes, Nathan, Dr. Andrew Buzari is on that panel. He is part of UHN, and they have taken over where Vaccine Hunters left off. So we're going to be talking about the efforts to get 5 to 11-year-olds vaccinated. A lot of families want to get at least one dose in before Christmas. That conversation coming up on CP24 tonight.
And Chanel, you're also taking a closer look at a provincial bill meant to combat Islamophobia.
That's right. It's called the Our London Family Act. It's named after the Ufsel family, who was mowed down in London, Ontario, back in June. 4 members of that family were killed. Tonight, we'll be speaking with Muslim leaders about the type of legislative protection they want to see, why legislation like this is important, and what this means to the Muslim community at large.
Chanel and Reshmi, thank you. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
To support.
Army headquarters in Markham. Looking coming up after the break, we will tell you how many toys have been raised so far as CTV and the Salvation Army helped build a mountain of toys.
Well, the countdown is on.
Yeah, Christmas is a little over a month away, and Andrea, the kids love toys.
They certainly do, and you can help build a mountain of toys by donating at a shopping mall. You can text 3033 and donate $25. And remember, that toy is a brand new unwrapped toy. Hey, folks, what are we trying to build?
A mountain of toys!
Okay, Glenn, come on in, my dear. Oh, so people have been donating.
They have.
This is the official start today, but people have been donating. So we do have a total thus far. How many toys have been raised so far for Toy Mountain?
11,402 toys already coming in. Thank you. Thank you.
So lots of time, folks. We'll be doing this for the next month. So please donate if you can. And we'll see you tomorrow as we help build
a mountain of toys.
Back to you guys.
See you. Thanks, Andrea. Well, that's a great start. Michelle, bring us some good weather news.
Well, we just happen to have some snowfall to talk about as well, so traced to two amounts here in the city of Toronto. But be aware things are difficult on the roads, especially to the north in areas that are in these snow squall warnings, watches, or winter weather. Travel advisories that extend all the way to the Cobourg area. Things are difficult on the roads in those areas and will be through the overnight period. -5 through the overnight, just 2 degrees tomorrow. Flurries will taper off Wednesday. 6 degrees, Thursday showers and 5, and we're a little bit cooler as we head through the weekend with those low single digit highs and more flurries. Back to you, Michelle.
Appreciate the heads up. Thank you, Michelle, and be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night. Bye.